Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, July 20th, 2018. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. This has been such a long week that I'm not even wearing a soft collar today. That's right. It's one of those rare Fridays. Of course, it's summer. I'm more inclined to be that cash. And joining us in studio, and now I feel like I should have dressed up.
At least I had paint stains.
Is there a little bit of paint on my shirt?
A little bit.
A speck, yeah.
It's
welcome.
Not good.
Welcome, Alex.
Sorry about that. Is journalist, writer, raconteur, anecdotalist, fabulous, maybe? Alex Perrine, in studio.
Hello, I'm here.
He's definitely here. Also on the program today, Trump invites Putin to D.C., blindsiding the deep state. Israel passes Jewish supremacy law.
It's official. We do it now.
Trump's Consumer Financial Protection Bureau nominee apparently has no experience in consumer or financial protection. Still have over 2,000 kids that we have kidnapped. I don't know if we're all going to get ransom money. Trump administration overhauls the Endangered Species Act to endanger more species. And they also expedite drilling in Anwar. Meanwhile, Mitch McConnell, Donald Trump, installing conservative judges at a record pace as the moon lodges itself in Lake Michigan. Poll shows that corruption is gaining traction against the Republican Party. And totally coincidental, Montenegro trial versus a coup attempt starts today. And lastly, Michael Cohen secretly taped Donald Trump discussing payments to a Playboy model. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it wouldn't be a week if we didn't have a relentless amount of absolutely effed up stories. All that and more on today's program. So, Alex, I don't know if you saw this because this just broke moments ago, but President Trump's longtime lawyer, Michael D. Cohen, apparently secretly recorded a conversation with Donald Trump 2 months before the presidential election in which they discussed payments to a former Playboy model. This is not Stormy Daniels, who said she had an affair with Donald Trump. This is according to lawyers and others familiar with the recording. So this was a recording that was seized during the raid on Michael Cohen's office. And as you know, prosecutors are looking into those questions to see if it broke campaign finance laws. Now, this woman was not Stormy Daniels. This was Karen McDougal, who had an affair with Trump in 2006, right after Melania gave birth to their son, Barron.
Nice.
And but her story got sold to the National Enquirer for $150,000.
That's the one they spiked, right?
Then they spiked it.
Yeah.
They sat on it. Now, here's my first question for you today, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
You have done a tremendous amount of reporting in your career.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you wouldn't know about something like this, but when you have a situation where someone tapes a random conversation,
mm-hmm.
right? Let's say you're a personal lawyer for your client and you've taped a conversation. Is it your sense that this is a one-off? Like, this is the one conversation I've decided to tape with my client who I've had for over a decade.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I would feel like you might have do that more of as a habit than suddenly decide one morning today is the day I'm going to tape. Today is the day I'm taping Donald.
Now, okay, so if that's the case, and of course this is all speculation, conjecture, right? But let's just assume that Michael Cohen had a lot of tapes,
mm-hmm.
and the FBI seized all his stuff in his office, and they've given it to the Cohen's lawyers mm-hmm. to look through to confirm what stuff may be clean, what stuff may be dirty from the perspective of, and I'm using that in terms of what is... what stuff may be germane and what stuff is client attorney privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this recording existed was, and now we don't know where this came from, but you're a reporter. Okay. So Mr. Cohen's lawyers discovered the recording as part of their review of the seized materials and shared it with Mr. Trump's lawyers. This is according to three people briefed on the matter. Now, I don't think, you know, non-reporters don't know that there are, that these terms, mm-hmm. people briefed with the matter, they mean something. Like, that's not anybody in the world. That means that there's a select group of people. And, I mean, I don't think people are really totally savvy about this. Like, mm-hmm. like just your average reader of the news doesn't realize, like, government officials means one category of people.
Right.
A high-level advisor means a distinct set of people that it could be.
Yeah.
So let me just ask you, as the way this is written, Mr. Cohen's lawyers discovered recording as part of their review of seized materials, shared it with Mr. Trump's lawyers, according to three people briefed on the matter. We have nothing to say on this matter, Mr. Cohen's lawyer, Lanny Davis, said when asked about the tape. Now,
wow.
Just even saying those words is pretty funny.
What a resilient scumbag. Wow.
Okay. So explain to people, like, how it's like, who could have been in that universe that told that? And why we would know that Mr. Cohen's lawyers discovered the recording as part of their review.
I haven't. You know, I only just saw this headline as I got off the train, but I get the impression that so if it's people briefed on the matter, it's like we could be talking about Cohen's lawyers' camps going with this, not just to like sort of put the screws to Trump, but also to say like there might be more. It could be the U.S. Attorney's office because this is going through them, right? This isn't, but
right. Yeah. But I mean, the Mueller investigation,
right?
By all accounts, right? Because we know Brett Kavanaugh, for instance, leaked during the Ken Starr
investigation. Yeah. But Mueller's people don't leak, right?
That's what it seems to be. What reporters are saying in private. Now, maybe they wouldn't even say that.
Well, that's why I was saying I thought it might be the U.S. attorney in New York who's doing this, which would be because he's been referring things to them, and they usually have more of a relationship. But what's the byline on this? Did Haberman do this one?
Matt Apuzzo, Haberman, and Schmidt.
Yeah. So Haberman is in with, you know, Trump and his team, obviously.
Right.
People briefed on the matter is like, you know, this was obviously done strategically and intentionally by someone to send a message, which is how these things usually work.
Right. And I mean, theoretically, it could be the lawyers.
Could be the lawyers.
Off the record, right?
Yeah,
And so they would make an agreement. I mean, I don't think people understand this dynamic with reporters, that like you can you call a reporter and you say, like, look, I'm going to give you the entire part of this story.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to go on the record only with one quote.
Yeah,
I have no comment, or it's like, this is very disturbing, or whatever it is. But in the meantime,
here's the whole thing.
Here's the entire story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's generally how it works. Yeah.
And I don't think people are aware of
it. No, and it's one of the failings, I guess, of the traditional sort of newspaper-y's style, which is that they think all these terms of art, I mean, they don't feel the need to explain them, I guess. I always feel like there should be a little bit more transparency. Even if you can't reveal who your source is, there should be a little bit more transparency about what these terms mean.
I couldn't agree more, Alex, exactly.
It's totally, I find it to be totally fascinating because I've been doing this, like professionally reading the news for almost 15 years now. And when I went through particularly the Cernovich story, I I had friends who were helping me in terms of negotiating with the reporters.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, like, if what time can this be published?
Yeah.
What time, you know, I'm going to give you X, Y, or Z, and are you going to give me, I mean, this is all a negotiation.
Yeah.
And these three reporters and all the people involved in this, they all have terms that they have already probably worked out, and then they make specific ones for each story.
Yeah.
And the point of that is that this is Michael Cohen, because clearly they knew the recordings existed before they reviewed them, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Michael Cohen did it.
He did it, yeah.
He probably mentioned to his lawyers, like, oh, I have one recording, or maybe I have boxes and boxes of recordings.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the tamest one.
Yeah.
I mean, Giuliani is in the story saying, look, there's no, there's a recording, but there's no specifics. Like, he didn't do anything wrong here. But this is Michael Cohen saying definitively to Donald Trump's camp,
like,
I have tapes.
I have tapes, yeah.
Here's an example of one that's not going to get you in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this to me says that Michael Cohen is still trying to, he's not flipped.
Oh, no, yeah, yeah. Because he, I mean, the way, and also they made a point of saying, like, they found it under review and shared it with Trump's lawyers and not, like, he shared it with them. You know, it's not like Michael Cohen told the prosecutors, look what I have.
Right.
He's like, yeah, you know, they found this, like, but we're still, we can maybe keep some other stuff away from him.
Exactly. And I say that because also the trial for Manafort starts next week.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, I guess, next week, 25th is when they start to select jury. And Manafort's in prison, and he is not, he's clearly not flipped yet.
Mm.
I think Manafort is, I don't think he's just waiting for a pardon. I think he's afraid of getting killed.
Yeah.
I'm not joking.
Yeah, that could, I mean, yeah.
By who?
Yeah.
By some of his former billionaire Russian oligarchs.
Could end up getting very tough.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, very tough.
This doesn't necessarily have any bearing necessarily on the question of collusion and whatnot.
Yeah.
But
that's more like the literal mafia end of all of this story. Yeah.
Well,
that's what he said.
Yeah.
That's obviously what the our position is.
I don't want to get whacked in the street.
But
maybe don't accept any tea from strangers for the next little while.
I want to get like that Chilean queer that got blown up in D.C. in the 70s.
I mean, okay, so this has all been my, like, my Maddow attempt at getting to the main story, which is this week, I think, has been a turning point in terms of the level of credulity
mm-hmm.
that a significant subset of the sort of the media, I think, and just sort of broadly America, I think, has started to take the Russian collusion stuff a little more seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, speak to that, because I'm curious as where you are, because I'm looking at this piece by this guy from Politico, and he's from Politico, and, you know, I don't really know his work that well. I think he was at BuzzFeed. I don't know. Why I'm no longer a Russiagate skeptic. Where are you on this? I'm curious as to, like, what, because, and I have to say, part of what has influenced my thinking significantly has been reading Marcy Wheeler, who I think is probably the most credible voice on this that exists, at least from my perspective.
Yeah.
Because having known her past work and you know, where she sits sort of politically.
Right.
And then she just coincidentally was on 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Like, maybe it was last week.
It was a week ago.
Wednesday. And then all this, since that's happened, the 12 GRU indictments, Donald Trump talking about EU being a foe, then meeting with Putin without anybody else in the room, then the press conference.
Yeah.
Then we have, and we'll play this in a moment, Dan Coats' sort of like 2 or 3 days of like the lights are flashing red.
And also in Trump being on with Jeff Glar the day before yesterday, we covered it yesterday, and complaining like, nobody talked about all the positive developments that came out of the meeting.
Yeah.
The meeting that it like, was just
none of us
in.
Could know.
None of us could literally know.
And I add, I will also add to this, the arrest and indictment of Maria Butina, is that her name?
Yeah, Butina.
Who appears to be a Russian operative of some sorts.
Yeah.
And could very well have been a conduit to bringing the NRA millions of dollars.
Yes.
And we should say, people have been talking about this story with the NRA for some time. The NRA sort of spent a lot more
in
this cycle than they normally do.
Yeah.
Which is counterintuitive, because this did not look like a good cycle for them.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, nobody thought going into that election like, oh, we're going to.
Yeah, no one was like, this is the restoration. Like, no one was like, Donald will lead the, yeah.
They knew it was a big one.
Since forever I've thought like, and I think other people have said this too, like collusion, it's like a term that, as Trump has done, like you can twist it to that, you can get out of it meaning almost anything, right? But I think it's like, it always was sort of clear to me that like the Russians, wanted Trump to win, were willing to help him, and that people in his camp were willing to accept that help, like either with plausible deniability about where it came from or openly welcoming it, knowing exactly where it came from. And that might be where the question has like lied. But so then, you know, what, like with Trump personally, like, yeah, he like Russian banks were like handling, like were giving him money for years, and like he was doing it, like trying to get projects done in Russia, and like when American banks didn't really want to deal with him. So all of this stuff, and it, like the events have been shocking to me, but I found like the Blake piece about why he's no longer a skeptic, like a lot of these things I feel like were like the pieces were there, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's remarkable to see them being put out in the open like that. But yeah,
I mean, I'm going to push you a little bit further, because I mean, here's the thing. From day one, I felt like this is Trump. There's definitely money laundering that's been going on there for a long time. And it's quite possible that Trump thought, and by Trump, I mean those close to him. Like, I don't know how much he is on top of any of this.
Right. Yeah.
But. They thought they were just dealing with the normal, Macedonian hackers that they use to get credit card numbers at different times or something like that.
Yeah.
But
that was part of the Target hack.
But the idea that there is a quid pro quo is really the question.
Yeah. Right?
And it did the Trump organization know that they were getting help? And did they also say, like, we will do something?
We will do something.
For you.
Wasn't that kind of the most shocking part of what Marcy Wheeler said, actually?
Yes.
She implied, like, serious geostrategic deals. Like,
right. Yeah.
We're going to restate, we're going to shift Syria policy fundamentally. We're going to, like, she said things that were far beyond what you would assume, like, will help you out with, capital or whatever your personal self-interest is, but, like, actual real deals that have major
impact.
Yes,
that they may have a vested interest in, too.
Right.
I mean,
this is the way it goes,
right? Course, like, people should know. It's like, in these type of situations, it's not just like, hey, we'll help you get elected, and you're going to do this other thing for you that's also not going to pay off. It's like,
no,
we're going to get you some insight. You're going to all take a piece of this.
Yeah,
right?
Like, exactly. Yeah,
like you show up with the car, and we're all going to share in the bank loot.
Yeah, we're all going to share in the new pipelines that we have a stranglehold over Europe on as we destroy the EU and NATO.
There does seem to be, though. I mean, there's also this sort of this weird thing of like, Trump does a very bad job of covering his tracks.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And I think it's just because he's partly crazy.
Yeah. Well, I fully believe that in, you know, it's like when they always were like, oh, we took the meeting about, it was about adoption. And it's like, that's not, you're not like making yourself sound innocent because we know what that means. Like, we know the entire adoption thing is about, like, letting your oligarchs do whatever they want. But I think that it's, oh, yeah, like, I would easily believe that they made grand geostrategic promises, and that what we have seen in the flailing since then is this realization that they can't maneuver around the government that they put in place to accomplish what they want entirely. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like they can't, like, Trump is doing everything in his personal power to, like, sow discord in the EU, and then meeting, and then, you know, if Putin is chastising him, like, maybe it's just about, like, well, you're not actually delivering on all these things that we actually wanted, you know?
And so, in the Richard Wolff book, and whatever, everybody's skeptical. I bought most of it. But there's a part where basically Bannon is livid because Ivanka and somebody else that I don't remember has done a PowerPoint where they've basically just shown kids being gassed in Syria. And Trump just starts going, the foam at the mouth. The foam at the mouth. That's all he can talk about. And he decides they need to do airstrikes in Syria. And Bannon is out of his mind, pissed. Yeah. And I thought of that with Marcy Wheeler because I was like, maybe there's a whole other level of being pissed about that right. in light of what she's saying, you know, and what you're saying.
And I think, you know, coincidental, I mean, one of the pieces that has come out about the Israeli passing the Jewish supremacy law today, and we're going to be talking more about that next week, is Juan Cole saying, like, you know, where's the outrage about Netanyahu and the sort of the relative to the administration? And it feels like there is, I have all these sort of disparate interviews that we've done over the years, like when the administration was first assembled, we had Dan Dicker on, who's a guy sometimes maybe you've seen on MSNBC. He's a commodities, particularly oil trader.
Yeah.
And he's like, this sounds like sort of the dream team you would set up if you're trying to do a petro authoritarian state, essentially.
Yeah.
And it's quite possible that that team was assembled not because they're all part of it, but they would all be amenable to these type of relationships.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, like, if you step back and you say, okay, how did Rex Tillerson end up in here? He didn't seem to have any relationships with anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
It could have been other people involved in some relationship between Russia, Saudi, UAE.
And then back to Alex's point, and then Israel. Rex is there because of what you're saying. But then the bump is Trump's like, I don't like that guy.
Yeah.
Right.
And the whole thing gets disrupted.
Right. Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's all about, like, you know, the first thing that the Trump administration did is sort of like what you read about mafia organizations doing, like, let's close the circle.
Yeah.
Right. Like, we're going to put all the capos, at arm's length, and we're going to close the circle. So we could just the five of us are going to do this, that type of thing. And there's a real quality to this that seems very strange. And then I have my pet theories about Felix Sater and the New York FBI and, you know, Trump being a longtime unwitting asset of the FBI because Sater, who seems, it's clearly was an FBI CIA asset.
Yeah.
To the extent that Loretta Lynch is writing letters on his behalf when he's stabbing people in the face with a
cocktail glass. Yeah, just, I like that detail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just,
I mean, if this guy is helping different organizations tracking money that might have to do with arms deals,
recovering Stinger missiles in Afghanistan,
or Osama bin Laden's phone number. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he's doing this, he needs a pool of money or a repository for this money. And that was clearly the Trump organization, knowingly or unknowingly, they probably, they thought, I think it's, the story with the Trumps is like, they thought they were dealing with this bad guy, but it turns out they were dealing with like a whole host of other bad guys just going through one sort of like small timer bad guy.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And, but it is like, why would you need to meet with Putin alone?
Yes, no, exactly. Exactly.
And like, even
trust fun.
I mean, honestly, like, this guy has no policy like agenda or
right. Yeah.
And
yeah, like his only, like, again, like if you're talking Trump, like the only policy, especially in international affairs, that he actually cares about is like is like tariffs. So yeah. Which is like, we're not like, that's not going to come up with Putin personally. Like, oh, you know, our steel imports. I got to talk to Putin man to man about like steel tariffs. Well,
but
no.
Why would you even need to do
you
that?
You wouldn't even need to do that. No. Right?
Maybe Putin told him that they did.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing. Like, Donald Trump, like on some level, and you know, he's also crazy.
Yeah.
That moment where like they had this story of like where Putin said on stage, like, I didn't know he was in town. He's just 500. There's 500 businessmen. I didn't know he was here, you know, and Trump retells the story the next day.
Yeah.
But he says, to be fair, I'm probably pretty big when he probably knew I was here. Like, yeah. Like he couldn't even
yes.
let
he couldn't
the
let...
cover story. No. He's so insecure
yes.
that yeah. he couldn't let the cover story sit.
But no. It wasn't even a real cover story because he just said, I didn't know he was there. He didn't say anything on the merits.
He didn't, yeah, exactly.
And well, Trump's just like, well, the part that he didn't say is totally true because there's no tape. But the part that he did say, that's probably not true because I'm super notable.
I mean, but you know that you're in hot water about this Russia thing. Undoubtedly, any of the political aides around him would say, Mr. President, you know how this is going to be reported.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And you could have someone come in there, and he's got to make this determination. There has to be a very aggressive reason.
Yes.
Why he needs any. It's one thing to say, like, okay, I'll let you in, but nobody talks but me.
Yeah.
You could do that. You're the president.
Yeah.
Right? Like, but he, I mean, this is nuts.
Yeah. And because you can at least say about Trump that he has a self-preservation instinct that's very strong, and this violates what a normal person would what the self-preservation instinct would tell that normal person. Like, this, there's no way to construe this in a way that looks good for you. Like, and people around him were telling him that, but he has to do it. He has to take this meeting anyway. Like, okay.
Well, but that could be the self-preservation.
No, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
He's
yeah.
got to go in there and like, what do I say?
Yeah. Right.
I mean, what do I got to do to not have you do what you're going to do if I don't do it?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's.
I'm in the say I didn't know you were in town. Could you please not do that? Please. Is there any other scenario?
How about. You just say that you were busy. You knew I was in
there. Yeah, you knew I was
there.
Very
upset.
And you wouldn't
hang out with
film me because of respect. And, because of respect.
Exactly. What about, I'm spitballing. You were intimidated by me.
Yes. Yeah.
Sure, absolutely.
All right. So here is one of those moments. So the moment that Trump gets done with the conference, Dan Coats goes out. Remember, it's like on both sides, right? Like they drop the indictments before he goes
before
into his
goes.
Meeting,
yeah.
Which is, to me, I mean, I saw some piece, I don't know where it was, that was like, it was Donald Trump's decision to announce this beforehand because he wanted leverage. Nobody even took that story seriously enough. To, like usually a story like that gets written and then other people sort of reference it.
Yeah.
And nobody even took
it
seriously enough to believe that. So Mueller does this, it seems to me, or Rosenstein, I guess, because to basically say, hey, everybody, look how weird this is going to be. Like, here's a test. Here's a test. You decide whether or not he passes.
Yeah.
And then he fails.
Yes.
And then Dan Coats, and I don't know when the last time I said Dan Coats' name on this program was, right?
Yeah.
Just emerges out of nowhere, sticks his hand up and goes, hey, 9/11 level of what we're dealing with here, right? Yeah. Like 9/11 dealing, you know, Dan Coats is not, you know, with all due respect, Dan Coats is not near a Tandon, right? Like,
right.
It's like,
oh,
this
yeah,
is
yeah,
not
yeah.
like resistance.
Yeah.
He's
no,
saying 9/11.
Yeah.
And then he decides to go to Aspen. Maybe he would have gone to Aspen anyways.
Right.
And go with Andrea Mitchell to have this interview, you know, taped. He's going out in public talking about how I wouldn't do this, I wouldn't do that. And then this moment happens, which it just is like astonishing. Here, this is Dan Coats with Andrea Mitchell sitting on plexiglass.
Really uncomfortable stools. Looking chairs.
Yes, like, yeah. We're going to make this super uncomfortable for everybody. Talking about at the security forum, Aspen Security, and in the middle of the interview, this happens.
Questions. I do want to say we have some breaking news. The White House has announced on Twitter that Vladimir Putin is coming to the White House in the fall.
Say that again.
Vladimir Putin coming
to the... Did I hear you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's going to be special.
Everybody's laughing, but it is a little bit weird.
It's very weird. This is the director of national intelligence. Like this, it's very weird that... the laughter's weird. His response is weird. Like all of it.
I'm meeting with the Ayatollah next week. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. NDI doesn't know. Whatever. We had a private meeting. Nobody talks about the great deals we cut in that meeting.
I mean,
nobody.
What
totally
does
unfair.
What does Trump think he's doing? Like, I mean,
I don't know.
He clearly was told that. You and I are having a like that came out of the first meeting,
right? Yeah,
right. Like, yeah. Putin went in there and said we're meeting in 3 or 4 months from now.
Yeah,
in D.C. and he's like, okay.
Yeah, it was one of the accomplishments in the meeting.
Yes,
right. Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah,
because there's no way anybody at the White House thinks I know how we get out of this mess.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's blindside the entire government with inviting Putin to the White House.
I have the perfect plan to get everyone off our backs.
Exactly.
And you know what? Let's surprise everyone. Like, let's make it a nice surprise.
And, you know, this is going to be great for Republicans running for Congress.
Yes. Yeah.
Because we will time it so that this falls basically a couple of weeks before the election.
Yes.
Right? Like, I mean, this is insanity.
It is.
On any, there's no, at one point, like, it just, we're heading into territory where it seems like history is going to look back on this and go like, seriously?
Yeah.
Like, how many pieces of evidence do you need that are clearly out there? I mean, like. The thing where Trump goes out there and says, Russia, if you're listening, go for the 30,000. Yes. Right. Like, I don't know if, you know, like, I try and look at that in two different ways. Like,
yeah,
on one
hand,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, me too. I know exactly what you mean.
Well, explain it.
Well, because it is, like, on the one hand, it's like, his version of a joke. It is, like, his version of a joke. And it's a campaign stump, like... You know, like, you know, we go get the rest of the emails right. If you're the ones hacking us. But then, like, you know, they tried to do it afterwards.
They did it within hours. And so that could just be like, well, I mean, these guys were, you know, I mean, it's like I could say, I mean, this is what I could say, like, God, man, I think it would be fucking hilarious if Dave Rubin, like everybody sent Dave Rubin, you know, like, I don't know, some gag gift in the mail.
Right.
And then
there
are listeners of the show who might be like, hey, I actually have a supplier of those type of gag gifts and I can do it for, you know, I'm just going to do it. And then they just do it. I mean, it could be that dynamic or it could also be like, I'm just going to put it out there because those guys will hear me.
Because, yeah, exactly. Yes.
I mean, I mean, let me put it this way. It's also conceivable to me that I would say that knowing that they would do that. Now, that's not, there's no quid pro
that's
quo.
That's exactly it, too, where it's like if you know, you do know they're listening and you do know that they have done this, like, and then you say that with that knowledge.
Right. And there's a difference between me knowing that my audience is listening and that they would do stuff like that, right? Like, I could say, like, hey, it would be great if we won the People's Choice Podcast Award this year.
Yeah.
But do not, if you have a bot, do not use it because they can tell that there are bots if they are done in this way.
Yeah.
And that's me saying to somebody, because I know there are people in my audience who do that type of stuff.
Yeah.
How does Donald Trump know that there's Russians who are actually hacking on this stuff?
I just want to clarify for our listeners, we do not want you to send Dave Rubin poop in the mail, okay? It would be very bad if you did that.
I never even said the word poop. Yes. Well, I don't have control over the soundboard.
Competition would start kicking in.
No, what's up?
Oh, no, I thought different. You were going
to... Oh, no. This, I mean, I was going to say about the... Look at the thing. Look at the... this, we're talking about the Trump investigation. And when you start to add all this stuff up...
I actually thought it would be funny if you said it yourself. But
oh, I was going to say, this is red flaggy all over.
I'm suspect of that. This is that to me, this is red flaggy all over the place.
That's a little inside. Maybe we'll explain to you later, Alex, what that's about. But
I feel like of the, all the people that sort of cycle through here, I think Alex would be the closest to like the grid of really actually wanting to know that and, and being amused by it. Legit. Well, this, I think Alex is actually like, I would like to know about a minor YouTube feud and an ongoing petty internal joke. Yes, thank you.
There is a... we have a... now it's calmed down a little bit.
Yes.
Because, but a feud with Jimmy Dore. Who and that's actually where the moon and going into like Michigan. Half the idioms on the show.
Yeah, essentially
now,
all of the references
of stuff that he said to me about the chances that somehow Trump will have picks on the Supreme Court. You know, like, the moon could fall into Lake Michigan. Anything could happen. I'm like, well, I think the odds are a little bit different.
Jimmy Dore is like the Bible to this show's John Milton.
Exactly.
Exactly. At literary hangover. Nice, dude.
And that quote, the red flaggy, was about Seth Rich.
God.
Yeah. So,
yeah, okay, smear so, fellow progressive.
All right. It's quite possible. There's a lot of people who feel like the GRU indictments were the predicate for another round. Now, I've heard two different things. I've heard 60 days and I've heard 90 days. In terms of the window where DOJ policy is, you're not supposed to talk about an investigation that could impact an election. And I got to double check on this.
Yeah.
I have a buddy who was involved in public corruption cases at one point, and he would know. But Manafort's trial starts next week. 90 days, as far as I can tell, is more or less August 1st. 60 days is September 1st, right? September, October, more or less.
Yeah.
And I guess the question is like, what do you think the next 3 or 4 months are going to be like? and how does this play with, and I guess, the NRA stuff is also in play.
Right.
RT, and I will say, we had Marcy Wheeler on. She has the story, I'm sure you're aware of, how she had to turn in a source.
Yeah.
And she's convinced that there's more stuff coming and that it's bigger and that it implicates Trump directly. Mm. And the only thing I would also point out that we should know about this indictment is the specificity of how they knew and what they knew also, to me, feels like a – red flag.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, this has the same sort of feel as the Cohen tapes.
Yeah.
Like, dude, we didn't want to do this, but we're telling you, and we're telling everybody, and we're blowing the cover of some people.
Yeah.
And that type of stuff seems to be what Marcy Wheeler is upset about.
Yeah.
That there have been assets and individuals who are in mortal danger or have been because of what has been revealed through this stuff.
Yeah.
And the White House and the FBI, having to give up sources to the White House and to Republicans in
yes.
the House.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the only other thing I would say I would add to the mix, and it's RT. I don't know why they would be reporting this, but supposedly Julian Assange may be leaving London soon.
Ecuador is almost certainly going to. And I mean, that also has a lot to do with what's happening in Ecuador. this guy Correa has a handpicked vice president, you know, successor who's significantly more to the right than Correa, and also is trying to put Correa in jail. They just did an Interpol notice on Correa and accused him of being involved in a kidnapping scheme. So I'm sure it's connected, but this has a lot to do with what they're trying to do. And it might not be part. Although, you know,
who knows?
It's all coded.
Who
it's
knows?
All connected.
Yeah.
It
would have been impossible to predict the last, you know, 3 months. So it's really hard. I mean, I definitely believe there's more coming. And I think you get the impression that what they've gone public with so far, primarily with the Russians, is like a prelude to going after the Americans. And I think the NRA thing in particular is evidence of plenty of material, not even just directly implicating Trump, but directly implicating this sort of entire conservative movement.
Well, what do you guys think of that was kind of like what Mark Blythe floated to me. And he's self-admittedly like not an expert in this, but he has talked to people involved who he's like, you know, I've talked to people now who are somewhat directly involved in this. And he's like, that's another thing is that this investigation could basically turn, and that's the David Kleon piece essentially, that especially when you got rid of Citizens United, you have these like lobbying / PR / spying shops with unlimited amounts of money coming from Russia, Dubai, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and it could like implicate almost the entire modern political class on some level if you really start following this stuff out. And that's something that scares them in the investigation.
Well, that's the thing that I think has been, you know, that has always occurred to me, that like just replace Russia with like Boeing, you know, or like replace Russia with like
and get away
any,
from the Russia
xenophobia.
And
it would be just as disturbing.
Yeah.
I mean, I find it very far fetched that we would get into World War III with Russia.
Yeah.
I'm not as concerned about that as a worry. Are we maligning them? Maybe, you know, somewhat unfairly.
Well, that actually is one of the sort of left wing lines among the skeptics, this hyper skeptics that
the
really bugs me.
Xenophobia against
Russia. But not just the xenophobia, but the idea that like, well, you know, like, well, what do you want? You want World War III? Like, you want you? But it's like they're. Well, what I would like is to like. For someone to take down the international kleptocracy, like, I don't want missiles launching, but I would like to see this like endless free flowing dirty money, like not be free flowing.
And if you want
I feel
to
like there's got to be a middle ground.
Yeah, there is like a way of saying, or how about we will de-escalate mutually, deal with the kleptocracy issues, and if you want to deal with the military stuff, say like you obviously, I mean, international law is dead, but like you need some type of international conventions to govern cyber warfare, obviously, because it's completely unchecked and everybody's doing it to each other all the time. We did it to Iran and unleashed a major computer virus across like that could be something that comes out of it. How about we mutually agree to not hack each other's elections and steal each other's intellectual property
well,
and all of that? Like,
Stuxnet
whatever.
Was, I mean, I'm not
no,
it was a Stuxnet
at, it was,
apologist.
It was at
their
nuclear
but,
reactor.
But yeah, I
yes.
mean, it was like,
yes.
that is like more like it's sort of.
I mean, it's still illegal. I mean,
no,
it's still,
no, of course, of
it
course.
Still implicates
it's,
the
it's,
process. It's a different
it's
thing.
It's a slightly different kind of thing. Like,
although, by that logic, if we're going to say that's, I mean, because Iran, I'm just saying, I know you're
clear,
not.
I'm not justifying.
I know you're not, but I'm just saying Iran says their program is for energy, and it's never been proven otherwise.
Right.
And if you start getting into dealing with people's
right.
power
and
grids.
And then exactly. Power grids is like sort of like another sort of element of this. But it is, you know, I don't think, look, we, you know, they can't even muster what they need to attack Iran. Never mind. Essentially, saying like, you know, selling to the American public, like we're prepared to lose a major city or two over this thing.
But
like,
that was isn't that people just not knowing? Like, even at the most tense times, like there's still communication between Russia and the United States in Syria. Like, hey, we're both fighting a proxy war here and bombing the hell out of this place.
Yeah, but
and killing a ton.
But
of
they're
civilians.
On the phone with each other.
Yeah, let's like, make sure like, we don't escalate this because this is how they do.
Yeah,
it's actually another lesson in international kleptocracy and imperialism.
So I'm not an expert on the Russia story, but I do spend a lot of time on Twitter.
And feels like the beginning of an ad.
That's awesome.
Which basically makes me an expert. It would seem that people on both sides of this issue are very overly focused in on Russia, to the exclusion of more important things that we were just talking about. Like, there's people on the left who see Russia as this, like, anti-colonialist freedom fighter, like, checking U.S. power and like giving us a taste of our own medicine.
<That's>, yeah.
And there are people, I would say, in the center who are conflating Russia with the former, with the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
And they're saying all kinds of, like, crazy anti-communist things when Putin is a capitalist, and they just, it's a mess on both sides, people.
I mean, I haven't seen like the,
and, like, the Russophobia.
I haven't seen like the claims that it's communism.
There's,
I've seen
the overblown
notion of the threat that Russia, as opposed to these actions, mean for the United States. Like I say, if Boeing was doing this, it would be just as disturbing.
And they probably are.
And they would probably do it better.
Yeah. I think they probably would, yeah.
There's also this bizarre, like, anti-Slavic strain I've been seeing where people criticize, like, Russian culture and things that have nothing to fucking do with it.
Well,
like,
okay,
would they be doing that if it were Boeing?
Let's get back to your premise.
Have you heard their pop music,
It was
though?
On Twitter. Right? It's on Twitter. Like, this is, there is...
The hive mind.
Well, I understand, but this is, I don't even know if it's the hive. I mean, I think it's like, it is, Twitter is, you know, sort of the margins of everything on some level.
Well, I mean, Russians are cold and brutish people. We all know this.
Well, right? The funny thing, I will say this, which I think sort of plays into this, is that there is sort of a quality to this scandal, as opposed to it being Boeing or whatever. Right. I don't know. I'm just using the word Boeing.
GE, the Koch brothers.
Whatever, exactly. That does have a feeling of, like, the emails that you get that are written in English that you know are not written by a native speaker. Mm. Like, there is, like, a couple of things, like, literally in terms of, like, the stuff on Twitter, but even the calculations, you know, seem to be a little bit like there's just a couple of things that are just like slightly off. Like, they can't quite get what will play and won't play.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
In the
yeah.
States. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why they need it. That's, so this is like, boy, funneling their money through the NRA is a great investment for them. Like, they...
It's so crazy it might just work.
Yeah.
You know, it's like... Like, it is honestly, it's perfect. Like, what is more American, you know, from like the outside? Like, you ask Europeans, like, what is America? Cowboy hat, gun.
Like, they might have tried the McDonald's Corporation first. Like,
right,
they might
exactly.
have first gone to them and been like.
There's only... like a debate in some Russian intelligence unit. And one guy's just like, Nate Silver says it's looking very bad for us. And the other guy's like, no, victory goes through dissatisfaction in Midwest states. They're tired of elitism of gay Obama.
that actually gets at, like, that gets at what is one peculiar aspect of this, which was the degree to which elements in our society welcomed it, because it wouldn't have worked if it wasn't turbocharging already existing strains in our politics.
Without a doubt.
Barbara from Connecticut, right?
Shout out to Mary Lou.
What was her name? Mary Lou.
So yesterday we played, I mean, you talk about like the susceptibility to this, that the Russians could think like, and I don't think they came up with the idea of the NRA, but she was courting this Republican advisor who knows what courting constitutes. Yeah. And
nice.
And essentially you can see some of the outlines of how they came to the NRA, and who knows if the Russians were like, wow, this stuff is, or, you know, I mean, probably not, because I think, you know, the idea of like corruption is not something surprising.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think from like the fairy tale notion, I mean, a lot of people out there, I think if it ever comes out that the NRA was this corrupt, I think are going to be sort of surprised.
Yes.
Now, I wouldn't be. I mean, to me, it just seems like a completely corrupt premise almost of that organization. But the idea that there are the susceptibility, we played a clip yesterday from a C-SPAN show.
But that was Tuesday.
Tuesday. Should we play it again?
Sure.
Yeah, why not? It's
Let's play it again.
Minute, right?
So on Tuesday, exactly we played this clip.
In Newington, Connecticut, line for Independence. Mary Lou, good morning.
Good morning. I'll try not to sound too awful, but I want to thank the Russians for interfering with our election to stop Hillary Clinton from becoming president. That
Can
woman
we pause and just and cut on Farin, who's got his hand, his head in his hand. He's just like embarrassed for everything. Yeah. All right, continue.
Woman has got illusions of grandeur, and so hasn't her husband. That man, the whole time he was in the White House, was just fooling around sexually with Monica Lewinsky. He is an accused rapist. He has never denied it. And his wife never did anything to stop him from doing that.
Mary Lou, let me ask you, do you think Russian interference was the reason that President Trump won in 2016?
Yes, because the Russians interfered. I mean, what would we do with Hillary in that White House? That woman, she doesn't know what she was doing. What a mess she made of Benghazi. What she did with those emails to put a server in her living room or wherever she put it.
All right, pause it. Okay, first off, two things. One is that guy.
Yeah.
That guy, the host.
Yeah.
That guy, he should get a medal.
He should, yeah, like, he's like
the poker face that he maintains.
This. Just what a pro.
C-SPAN's great at that. Brian Lamb was a king at that, too, for a long time.
Substance-wise, we should also say that, like, the one thing that we did learn in this indictment is that the only thing that was secure
was the
only thing that was secure, whether it was the State Department emails, whether it was the only thing that was secure was that server her living room or basement or bathroom or wherever the hell it was. That's the only thing that was secure.
Yeah.
Okay. So after we played that video, we're like, we're watching.
That's the next. It is. It's the next one. It's the next step.
I give you the next step.
Yeah.
Jacob Wall. Who is this dude? Yeah, he's a MAGA blue check. And if Russia assists MAGA candidates on the internet in this year's midterms, that's not the end of the world.
That's the phraseology of that is beautiful.
Right. Yeah, it's really...
I'm not exactly co-signing on it.
It's almost like a lawyer looked at it first, you know? Like,
like, yes.
Cassandra Fairbanks responding to McKay Coppins. If Trump and company just pivoted to, aren't you glad Russia helped us to defeat Hillary Clinton, would there be any serious blowback from the base? Cassandra Fairbanks answers, no. I mean, I'd be cool with it. I'm already there. If Russia was involved, we should thank them. Kirk Bridgers, speaking as a Trump voter, Hillary is a greater threat to our republic.
Well, can you imagine if, like, the left side were doing that? Like, if Bernie were like, if Venezuela was involved, we should thank them?
I don't know. Perhaps Venezuela did hack their emails. Perhaps they can find more. Perhaps they could get the work. But, you know, nobody talks about the private meeting we had. Why would I listen to the CFO? Rasta don't work for the CIA.
I mean,
CIA.
This is what's going to happen, right? I mean, they're going to ride this. You know, I was on a show yesterday with Bob Torricelli, right?
The former New Jersey senator.
Yes.
Far out.
And he was like, Mitch McConnell needs to go to Donald Trump and say, you need to have national security people in this meeting with you and Putin.
Did you say maybe you otherwise, really didn't take bribes?
Otherwise, you know, history is going to judge you and this and that.
Oh my God.
And he was getting very passionate. And he definitely believed it. Like, I heard him in the green room, and he was just
he
really believes it.
Wow.
And then, of course, I was like, well, we already know how history is going to judge McConnell. He in the summer of 2016 when he first heard about this stuff that – If it was brought up, he was going to punish everybody politically.
Yeah.
And this is not going to happen. Mitch McConnell's going to ride this out. This NRA thing, I know people are saying like, oh, the Republicans are covering up. There may be a couple that know.
Right.
There may be a couple. But they're all going to be able to say like, I was getting money from the NRA. I had no idea what was going on with
right.
that money.
Yeah.
It was coming from the NRA. The NRA may go down, yeah. which would be
yeah.
beyond, I mean, just beyond all of it, right? Like, right. I mean, just the one thing that basically brings us sensible gun control in this country is the Russians.
It's, yeah, it's like a criminal prosecution.
Right? Like, when do I call in to
If C-SPAN the Russians are going to bring down the NRA,
glad.
I say, I welcome it.
I'm glad Russian interference
I'm glad the Russians
in the 2016 election, because now my kids can go to school and don't have to worry about being yeah. shot up by a semi-automatic
Russia,
weapon.
If you're listening, keep giving money to the NRA.
If you're listening, some of us might find it very helpful. There are a lot of weird mid-level operatives that could be bribed by sex with even the most mediocre looking of your spies. Continue doing what you're doing.
All right. We should take a break. If you can, Andy Kindler is going to join us, and then we're going to talk more. But obviously you can join in the conversation with Andy Kindler. We're going to be talking about Dennis Miller.
Oh, okay.
As we do. But
yeah, just be really honest about how.
Last time you were on, we were talking about Chuck Schumer and
yes. And the Baileys.
And the Baileys. And the question is have the Democrats in the past couple of weeks, have they learned anything in terms of of dealing with this stuff? I think.
I don't know.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Andy Kindler will be with us, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it has been far too long, but as you know, it's a Friday, and on Fridays, sometimes, when we are super lucky, we have the occasion, the reason, the motivation to play this song.
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot, and he believes
Obama can never be wrong. Yeah, AnnaKindler.com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your own theme song. AnnaKindler.
Yeah!
It makes me cry every single time.
Really?
Yeah, because when you hear, how can you not tear up when you hear, what a jewel like AnnaKindler?
Well, if we can bring tears to your eyes in this day and age, Andy, it is, it's all worth it.
I'm already pre-laughing. People can't see it, but just the even just the shot of Miller and O'Reilly just looking so sad in the split screen, even before we get to any content, it's already good.
Well, someone told me he was on. Is he on the radio again, or is it a pirate?
He's got a podcast. I should say this, ladies and gentlemen. It's no Thought Spiral.
that is really mean.
What do you mean?
I have my own thing. I promote things terribly.
Wait a second. What do you mean it's mean? I was just promoting Thought Spiral on your podcast.
I'm trying to create some controversy between me and you.
Oh, is it?
Do you have a different podcast?
No, I don't know where I was going with that line. It's really, sometimes usually I'm funny, but you can't guarantee it.
Now, Andy, no, of course, but we always think you're funny. Now, what's going on with your voice, man? Did something happen in the club last night?
Well, my voice has been raspy for a while. And I wish I had a joke about it. But I think it's getting better. But then as soon as this call started, it started to act up again.
And you are, where are you? My understanding is
I'm in Minneapolis.
You're in the Twin Cities.
Acme Comedy Company. And a Majority Report listeners came up to me after the show. More than two.
All right. Well, let's.
And so it's growing. It's growing. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I thought we had more than two listeners, but our Majority Report listeners are your Friday show. Those people wait till tonight. They're going to come out big time, yeah. Andy. How many Thought Spiral fans came up?
Two.
All right.
But this Thought Spiral is just me and Josh Elvis Weinstein just talking. No guests.
No guests.
Is that literally his name?
That's Andy apologizing for not inviting
Weinstein,
me on the show.
But his name is Josh Weinstein, but he has to distinguish himself from The Simpsons' Josh Weinstein.
Andy, I know that you happen to be Jewish, but I also happen to know that you're white. And so I thought you would appreciate this. Bill O'Reilly is traveling at the moment, if we're to believe his Twitter feed. And he is standing in front of a sign in Ireland. Fate go Conte o Chabin, I think is what the sign says.
Black people stop complaining.
Welcome to County Cavan. And Bill O'Reilly tweets, enjoying my time in Ireland, visited County Cavan, where my ancestors were evicted from their land in 1845. That forced them to come to America legally so they wouldn't starve. Pardon me if I reject the white privilege scenario if applied to my family.
That's me sober and odd message.
My family
was oppressed.
Why are
these people coming up from Honduras? You know what I mean? Come in legally where they're escaping one out of seven people being shot. Can't they do it the way Bill O'Reilly's great-grandparents did it?
He was starving.
The way Bill O'Reilly's great-grandparents came legally was that it was impossible for an Irish person to come illegally at the time.
That's right.
It was actually, there is no way an Irish person could have illegally immigrated to the United States.
Completely no laws that would prohibit them.
We were starving, but we were able to build submarines that snuck right into the Hudson.
He would have had to have come up with his own, he would have to have hired their own people to shepherd them.
I also wonder if his family came over in shackles and was then summarily auctioned off so that his different family members went to different places in America and spent a generation or two in
No, but I will tell you, they didn't give us three square.
That's what gets me. Here's what gets me about these people. They're like, I know oppression. My family was oppressed. Therefore, I have no empathy whatsoever for anyone who's oppressed now. Like, that is not the lesson that I would take from
when
that.
When I think of myself, you know, my ancestors, I think, fuck Mexican kids.
You know how hard it is for a white, 6'12" white man to get ahead in our society when 200 years ago there was some prejudice directed towards Irish people? It's not easy. It's not easy.
Well, also, to be fair, Andy, as a Jew, you, I sure am aware that we were also in bondage in Egypt. Mm-hmm. It took... you know, we're still, I think, in some ways, still suffering from that that period of time in Egypt where we were in bondage.
Pharaoh was so mean.
I mean, look, we still have matzah.
Right? We didn't have time to bake it then.
That's right. And we still, we're still sort of trapped by matzah.
Actually, Jews do fetishize their own oppression and should probably stop playing identity politics.
Before I became a comic, all I did was Pharaoh references, and then I updated them.
That's
cool. By the Pharaoh? You know, this guy's the Pharaoh over here.
When I did the Stitches, do you remember this in Boston, the Stitches comedy riot? Do you remember
that? Oh, no, because I never worked in Boston at those, like, Nick-type clubs or whatever.
Right, this was sort of like the better of those. And it was a comedy competition for, like, you know, like amateur comedians or, you know, and I can't remember who it was. I did a routine and it was like about Jesus, right? It was like a Jesus routine. And Cam Neely was one of the judges. He was a famous Boston Bruins hockey player. And you would get the ratings from the judges and they would give comments. And he wrote, okay, but need more current stuff.
Oh, man. What would he say about Dennis Miller? I kind of thought.
Right, exactly. Dennis Miller's doing stuff mostly from this century, or at least I would say the 20th century. I was going back to, like, I was going back to the aughts, the real aughts.
That's
You might alienate people with those older references, is what he was saying.
So here is, and we want to do this one before. Well, let's get to this after we do Dennis Miller. I wanted to do the Bill O'Reilly thing as a way of prefacing this clip with Bill O'Reilly, Dennis Miller. They're back at it. Now, Miller has his own show now. That's the Dennis Miller option.
What a great name. It's an option.
But you're saying
nothing, if you can't get any other reception, you use that option.
You're saying I can have it without the Dennis Miller, though?
Yeah, I'll take it without Dennis Miller.
Michael and I are still planning to do...
Gluten-free bun.
Michael and I are still planning to do our show, and we're going to want you on this, Andy, where we listen to Dennis Miller and a Dennis Miller episode and just mock it in real time, which we will call the other Dennis Miller option. Or maybe the better Dennis Miller option.
Right. The public Dennis Miller option. Yeah.
Here is Bill O'Reilly in Dennis Miller. This is from May. But I think this is evergreen stuff.
I don't know because he switches it up from like day to day. So this is already super stale.
What do you think? Well,
there might be references to movies made in like 1982 instead of 79.
I would say the topic is also pretty stale. But this one is, of course, about the scourge that we're facing right now, Andy. With everything that's going on, I think you're aware of this. You must know it as a performer. The the fact that we have to deal with PC culture is just killing
me. Oh, it's so hard. I can't say anything racist on stage anymore without causing a big stir.
Here we go.
Barbara. So has politically correct behavior and pressure influenced you at all in the way you present?
Sure. That's what they want. That's what they're going to get. When I was young and I was more fiery, I'd fight them. You really want to come on?
Pause it for 1 second. Andy, I got to tell you, Dennis Miller is so not into this. He's got the computer on his lap.
Yes. He's not even at a desk.
He didn't sit at a desk. And it's almost it. I'm getting vertigo watching.
Well, I do, don't you? I like the premise that, like, you know, back in my prime, I would defend a reference to Caligula to justify why black people are animals. But today, I'm too tired.
Here we go.
That hammer, I don't at age 64. I'll be honest with you. I don't think it's coming back. You know me. We've had this talk. I don't find it funny. I find it disturbing. I don't sense anybody on that side of the aisle who's doing all this finds it disturbing. And I don't quite see what's going to bring it back. Maybe I read an interesting article about Kanye West might have torn a hole in the fabric of it all by coming out and saying he loves Trump. It might take somebody from that side who's thought to be, you know, a salient, cogent social commentator. I don't know much about hip-hop, but I do know that my kid thinks he's brilliant, my one son. Maybe it takes something like that, but I do remember this. I watched Kanye West for years, and he always seemed insolent and angry and often drunk when I would see him at these award ceremonies, and nobody ever said a word to him. They chalked it up to artistic license. And then I remember
around a year ago,
he said if I had voted, right, I would have voted for Donald Trump, but I think his family and loved ones had him involuntarily committed later that week to a sanitarium.
Wait,
that'll show. I'm not even kidding there. I remember they put him in. I thought, that's what you have to do to be committed by your loved ones. That's when the intervention comes now, when you say something like, well, I think Candace Owens makes sense. Now they're out to get him. So I can't even find it mirthful. I can't find anything about it where you say, yeah, isn't that crazy? It is crazy. And what I... would I alter certain things I would say in these times? Yeah, I would.
How about the other comics that you know? Are they angry that they cannot express themselves the way they could about all topics, say even 10, 15?
Now, pause it for 1 second, right? And I mean, like, we always go back to this. People can express themselves any way they want, but what they can't do is do stuff that their audience who pays to see them doesn't like, because then they'll stop paying to see them.
Or right? Even just like, that they can say what they want and the audience can say what they want.
No, it's the audience here that is must toe the line of...
Also, I mean, whatever. I hate to do this, but like, okay, the president of the United States, the former one, called Kanye West a jackass. There was some response to his previous behavior.
Oh, except for Kanye West.
Obama called Kanye West a jackass on national television. But besides that, there was no response. Actually, you can't even do it. He doesn't even have any bop anymore. He's just like, there was no response to this guy.
Yeah, he dropped it all. Bop, he can't even do a reference to his computer.
Yeah. He should just lay on some earth and eat some Milano cookies.
Do you think he's on a computer? Or do you think he's just like putting the iPad in his lap?
Oh my God, it's probably the iPad.
Hey, the man knows his angles, okay?
The iPad's burning his
I mean, thighs. This is just sort of like, that's what I'm always amazed by is like the desperation of O'Reilly to have somebody come on his show. The increasing sort of like, hostility that Miller shows to O'Reilly by like, I'm going to make no effort. Like I can't.
This could have been a phone call. That's all this needed to be.
I can't even.
There's no one listening to these two guys. Just make it a Skype.
I can't even put on a T-shirt, and that's why I got to do this angle.
Hey, welcome. We got Miller here. It's time for some new jokes.
I do like that. Bill is still like projecting as if he was actually on TV.
Right.
Like he's still doing the full performance.
And his comic friends, he says. Yeah. He has no comic friends.
No, that is Dennis pretty great. Miller. He's like, welcome. Now we got a real firecracker. We got Dennis Miller here. He's going to break it down for us. Yeah, you know, Billy, I've been thinking about killing myself. I saw this tranny doing a set at the club the other night, and I just can't. I think, oh, I just want to die. All right, so Millie, you're saying PC's not good for comedy, right? Well, it's not good for anything. For
play
anything
a little more.
Really years ago.
I don't think so. I think that, listen, even when you're in the room, as they say, I think people watch themselves now. I don't know what to say, Bill. It is a pretty crazy thing that was happening. It's almost like Orwell missed it by 35 years.
Yeah.
But I think if you told him that you can't use certain phrases or you can't watch certain movies that are considered classics or you can't listen to that, or if you say this, they try to ruin you, I think Orwell would say, well, I'm looking to be, I don't want to be so on the nose about it. I want it to be a little more diffracted. It is weird times out there, and the people who are making it weird believe they're making it weird in the name of progressive liberalism. And that's an odd mix. I don't know what to say. They feel
right,
they're
for
right.
One second. Now, Matt, you got to help me out on this because I haven't read Orwell in some time. But was that book about like a concern that audiences would have a change in taste?
Oh, wait, what book are you talking about?
We're being too critical. 1984.
Oh. 1984?
Orwell, yeah. I just missed it by 35 years. Where,
I didn't even get that part.
Yeah, where audiences become really critical of content producers.
Because I was going to say, I thought that's what Homage to Kinda Lonely was.
Yeah,
about.
I was going to.
I thought that was the.
That's how it's
you
starts.
Can't do your gay jokes anymore. Book.
First thing you know, you can't do gay jokes. Next thing,
even shoot an elephant anymore.
Fucking Franco's taking over.
say that again, Andy.
He says, as they say in the business, in the room. What does that mean? Who in the business says in the room? He's like, I don't know what he's talking about.
I don't think anybody says in the room.
Yeah, but there's some insight that we need here that only multimillionaire show business people could possibly have their finger on. So, Andy, let me ask this to you. what I don't understand about Dennis Miller, and I guess any of these people, but it just does... He could honestly just be just as much of an asshole and be like, I'm 64 years old. I'm a multimillionaire. I barely ever work. Maybe I do need to work. Maybe that's why he's upset. Maybe he's running out of money and needs to work. But why would you be so unhappy if you had ridden such middling
talent?
He was in
Santa Barbara. I mean, that's the thing.
Like,
he was living in Santa Barbara on 9/11. You know, we've talked about this before. Was his make his Fiji water come late 9/11 or something? I mean, this guy. Why did 9/11 turn him? He's just always been an asshole. Is the only thing I can think.
Wow, that's so sad, though.
I mean, he could go out. He just. You know, I don't know. There's a lot of reasons why people are sad. I don't want to take him to task for that as much as what he blames.
I mean, too. I don't care if he's sad. I'd like to send him to the wrong side. I'd like to send him to an Ashton Kutcher psychiatrist prank thing and give him the wrong drugs.
I like how that's Andy's version of a Dennis Miller joke, except an actual Andy joke. Here's a slightly out of date cultural reference, and I hope it culminates in you getting misdiagnosed.
That's dark.
Hey, Doc, I haven't felt this tired since I took Thorazine and Nurse Ratchet and the Cuckoo's Nest, and I'm very tired.
Hey, two things. I think we need to give Dennis a little credit for being about 20 years closer to today in his cultural references, right?
Yeah,
Kanye.
True.
Only a little while ago that happened. And perhaps he's come around to some sort of defense of the rights of people with mental health problems via this little gambit.
I do give him credit. But you notice the way he uses words? Only he would say, and hey, Kanye's making a salient, cogent. I mean, that's like someone who uses the word utilize instead of use. He's just so impressed with himself because he knows 75 words.
Hey, the humor's in the pronunciation, all right? It's not his fault that you don't understand humor.
Didn't he say that he sounds that mirthful? Was he being sarcastic when he said that?
What, he said what?
How is he using mirthful?
Do you think maybe maybe Bill O'Reilly accidentally sent Dennis Miller a sexual harassment message and there's tension between them?
No.
Okay.
Let's listen more to this.
You know, Mel Brooks was in World War II. He fought in Germany, and he was very affected by the Holocaust and everything else. And now his movie that he won an Oscar for screenplay, if he had written that now, number one, it wouldn't have got made. They wouldn't have made it. And number two, would it be a microaggression to all these
producers?
People who are so sensitive,
the
they can't even...
So you're talking about the producers?
He's talking about the producers, but he's conflating it with, like, I think, like, Blazing Saddles.
Like,
or
not
something.
Only could you make the producers now, but they did. And it was
a
big hit.
Broadway, yeah.
They did it 2 years ago. Yes. It had 45 revivals.
Point and counterpoint.
And I like how Bill O'Reilly refused to, like, he was thinking of, like, Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, I think
he
was thinking Blazing Saddles.
He's a nerd. You know, that thing. And but then he moves it. He gets confused. And then he realizes, like, I can't say the Jews would be all over you right now. Oh, God.
People are telling me that they think Dennis Miller is on the toilet in this video. You think, what's the over-under on that, do you think?
You know what?
That's his career.
All right, keep playing. It's possible. God. Although that lighting leads me to believe it's not. But go ahead.
Made, they wouldn't have made it. And number two, would it be a microaggression to all these people who are so sensitive they can't even delineate satire, which obviously the producers is. They're satirizing things.
Oh, it is.
They're not
thanks, Bill.
Maliciously poking fun at anything other than the fact that Hitler was such an idiot. If you watch the movie, Dick Shawn plays him as an idiot, okay? But I'm disturbed because it goes into every...
This, by the way, like, this also shows how out of date Bill O'Reilly is, because it's modern Republican media. You don't just call Adolf Hitler an idiot, okay? Show a little bit more respect.
Yeah, exactly. But what's also sort of stunning about this is that no one has ever, like the producers are on Broadway.
Yeah, it's on Broadway. Yes. Talk you
in
down.
The most Jewish city in the country.
I remember Sam being like, we need to do producer segments because it's anti-Semitism.
Before he said it was the producers, I was hoping he meant Young Frankenstein and that it was actually monsters that were right. The ones who were...
Continue.
It's a microaggression.
Part of our lives now. And now we can't, we don't have freedom of speech anymore. Because if we say something, even a harmless jest, then it gets rammed down your throat as you're some kind of racist fascist person.
Hey, it's like, hey, you Puerto Rican whore, can I ram this down your throat? And then it gets rammed down your throat.
I just want to remind people the reason why Bill O'Reilly is talking in his storage closet to Dennis Miller, who may or may not be on the toilet with his iPad, is because Bill O'Reilly was a serial sexual harasser. And so that might have something to do with his complaints at this moment. There's no freedom of speech. You can't continue to have your company pay off $20 million lawsuits anymore. What happened? What happened to America?
Mochaccino latte. You want a little bit more vanilla than that? All of a sudden, no more free speech. You know what I'm talking about, Miller.
Go ahead.
I love the way that someone would watch the first part of the producers and think they really were celebrating Hitler and then write an angry letter. You know, like, who could watch that movie and think, is this a pro-Hitler thing that I'm watching? This is crazy!
Maliciously poking fun at anything other than the fact that Hitler was such an idiot. If you watch the movie, Dick Shawn plays him as an idiot, okay? But I'm disturbed because it goes into every part of our lives now. And now we can't, we don't have freedom of speech anymore. Because if we say something, even a harmless jest, then it gets rammed down your throat as you're some kind of racist, fascist person. I mean, what has happened?
I would say that there are most things I'll continue to say. But when you ask me candidly, are there certain things I... Put it this way, forget microaggression. If Mel Brooks made Blazing Saddles now and used some of that language, it would not be a microaggression. It would be a macro aggression in their eyes. Mel Brooks, if he was of a certain age, would have to be destroyed if he was in his prime. Yeah. And I can't tell you if they re-release that film in a theater, just hypothetically, and it's not going to happen. But if somebody said it's time for a re-release of this, I think they'd try to destroy. What is Mel today? 90? I think they'd go after him now.
Yep, we would get our marching orders. We would destroy Mel Brooks. I mean, that's the job, man.
Tyson putting the idea in people's heads to go after Mel Brooks.
So, Miller, I'm just giving an example. Say you go up to a girl at work, you say, hey, would you like a little of Kirkcaldy County in you? All of a sudden, your free speech is destroyed.
Totally. Totally.
Do you guys think he looked a little bit mad when he talked about how they played Hitler as an idiot?
Right.
Also,
because he thinks that Hitler...
He did it. He was just like, he's an idiot. What a moron. The Holocaust? Were you a moron?
They say he's stupid like he blew something for them.
You blew it! You could have wiped all of them out! You blew it!
You had him in the palm of your hand.
Get so much credit, Hitler. But the fact is, he was an idiot.
Yeah, really.
You can see why Bill O'Reilly's such a great author with his, like, that Hitler was an idiot.
Like, what's that?
Least competent genocide ever.
What's that Boston first baseman that had that ground ball go through his leg?
No.
Buckner.
Or he was Andres, the Andres Escobar of the Jewish problem.
Oh, we got to hold on for a second. Did you send that to Matt? All right, hold on for a second, ladies and gentlemen.
Miller, it set us back 70 years.
Folks, Dennis Miller wants you to know he's paying attention to politics that are happening. Just yesterday afternoon, when apparently Jeff Flake said that his completely ineffectual critique of whatever Donald Trump has done this week, Dennis Miller responds with, henceforth, all snowflakes will be known as Jeff Flakes. So it is written.
I'm out.
We need to get a camera on Andy so we can see him dying.
He
need to
turn his iPad on.
So it is written. So it shall be done. Is that like a Star Trek thing? Isn't it like... Or is that like, I feel like that was, that's like some version of like a Battlestar Galactica, So Say We All, or something like a...
It's a great tag, though, I'll tell you that. I don't know where it came from.
It's Pharaoh Ramses the second, actually.
Is it? Oh.
Yep.
Now there, that's an old reference there.
There you go.
I have no idea what that reference is.
Who got the Pharaoh Ramses reference? Wow. Now, Andy, you are a professional comedian. Would you explain to me how do you guys... Can we put that back up on the screen, please?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Can we put that
back
up on the
screen? Sounds like you're giving me a lie detector test.
No, Andy, you're a professional comedian. I'm just curious, how do you guys come up with this stuff?
I can't today. You can't today. You say anything today... You shout out any, even the lightest racial epithet, and people are they go all over you.
Do you think that when he gets criticism for being incredibly unfunny, that he's going to see this as a form of PC culture too? Like it used to be, you could take any two words, replace them, and people would think it was funny.
It used to be if you swapped two things, they'd laugh. And now,
I don't know what to tell you, Billy. It used to be if you said this thing was like another thing, and then Star Trek, they laughed. But now all of a sudden, with all the blacks and the lesbians, it's not happening.
The PC culture.
If you call them blacks and lesbians, you get they're going to cancel Blazing Saddles in the theater.
We got a new one. The NFL, as you know, Andy, has, because of the play, I think largely because of the players' union, has basically suspended their dumb national anthem rule that they had. And Dennis Miller.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. Dennis Miller has waved in on this. The NFL couldn't be any more in the gilding the golden goose business if they were Auric Goldfinger's executive chef the day before Thanksgiving?
What?
Is that a James Bond? Is it James Bond reference?
Yeah, that's Bond.
Is that Bond?
Yeah. Auric Goldfinger was the bad guy, but
right. Oh wait.
Auric it couldn't Goldfinger. Be any more in the Killing the Golden Goose business if they were Auric Goldfinger's executive chef today. I would have gone with Midas. Midas's executive.
Yeah, maybe you don't say translate. Gold twice in one joke.
That's why you're not a pro.
No, but the point is that Goldfinger's chef would have a golden goose.
Because everything Goldfinger owns is gold?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true.
Oh.
Okay. You can't even call it a goose now. You have to call it a golden flying thing.
A golden flying autonomous identity thing.
But here's the weird thing about it. First off, I'm going to say the obvious thing, which is, like, isn't, like, turkey more commonly eaten on Thanksgiving?
Yeah,
turkey's not secondly, as funny a word as goose.
Secondly, if I remember correctly, Goldfinger, not American. Why would he be spending, why would he be celebrating Thanksgiving?
Mr. Bond, you asked me why I celebrate Thanksgiving. It was because when I was a teenage boy, I did an exchange program from Holland.
When Auric Goldfinger's ancestors were kicked out of their country.
Andy. When I came to Holland, I came legally, I can assure you, Mr. Bond.
So, Andy, you're a professional comedian. Is this the way you guys come up with jokes? Like, I have a word, I have a premise that has the word gold in it. And then you got to find other words that have the word gold in it.
He uses a comedy thesaurus or something. I don't know. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he's able to pull out names that have no meaning and then just line them up in a row. It's like a trick.
I'm just working this out. The NFL couldn't come up with a more of a golden goose moment if they were a golden retriever hunting geese.
Yeah, but that's, you know, I feel like that's like a respectable, like, third grader joke. Like, these jokes are not respectable in any lane.
Every one of his tweets is so classically horrible. Every single one. Even when he's just advertising his show, he goes, and I'm going to be discussing golf with Alice Cooper.
Stay tuned for my next book, Miller, The Killing of Mel Brooks.
There is a quality. I have to say, like, Saul's now into telling jokes, my 5-year-old son. And he says, Dad, what do you call an angry cow? And I'm like, what? And he goes, a moody cow. You get it? Because cows say moo. And I sort of feel like, I feel like Miller should always have a follow-up tweet. Goldfinger's goose would have been gold. Then they would kill it, although it would already be dead the moment the act of turning it into gold would have killed it.
Thought that joke couldn't get better.
I like the concept that he even has to fill out his own, like, sort of composite character sketches to justify his joke. Like, why would Goldfinger celebrate Thanksgiving requires a whole backstory that Ian Fleming didn't even write.
Well, you know, you just have to let it wash over you, some of this comedy. You know,
exactly.
You know,
you
my
always
favorite
say yes.
line of
you
all
let
time,
it wash
though.
Over.
Still, when he was on Letterman years ago, I'll never forget this, and he goes, it's like calling in a squatch quee or something, and David Letterman corrected that he got the name wrong. Oh, it was so good.
Oh, was that that movie?
Koyaanisqatsi, yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. Letterman corrected him. That's great.
It's like a regular call you into squatch, please.
Oh, man. That kind of would kill his whole thing. If you mispronounced something like that and Letterman went, that's pretty bad.
Let's keep this Dennis Miller for next time. But I want to just... I know.
Said Sam never.
Well, I just wanted
to. Let's play it now.
Andy, I know what a fan you are of Richard Dawkins and the New Atheist. And Richard Dawkins had a tweet that I'm sure you're excited about.
He blocked me. He blocked me, so I don't get to see his tweet.
Okay, well, I know.
You bagged
he's blocked
the whale there,
but
dude.
Here is a tweet from Richard Dawkins. He writes, listening to the lovely bells of Winchester, one of our great medieval cathedrals, and he's taken a picture there of the cathedral. So much nicer. I mean, well, okay, Andy, you haven't seen the tweet because you blocked. What do you think follows? Like, okay, you're hearing something, you know, that you find is lovely, and it's in the you're looking at a really, I mean,
bucolic,
beautiful, classic. Beautiful, and sort of a wondrous. You know, human achievement in building a structure like
Harry
this.
Harry Potter dreams.
And what's the next thing that comes into your
too
head?
Too bad, like something like, too bad it was ruined by religion, or this wonderful thing was destroyed by a religious background.
So much
like
better,
that.
Andy.
No, it's so much more direct than that. He says, listening to the lovely bells of Winchester, one of our great medieval cathedrals, so much nicer than the aggressive sounding Allahu Akbar.
Oh my God.
And then he says, or is that just my cultural upbringing?
I like it.
Yes, because you're an imperialist who's still alive.
I think I think this is what the kids call a self-own, I would say. Yeah. Right?
That is how does he not say that that's not just by the way, I love what you say, that's racist. He goes, no, because Islam is a religion, so you can't say we're being racist when we hate them.
But
that's their argument against
what's
it.
What's fascinating to me about this tweet is that here's a guy who you would imagine, right? I mean, he takes issue with religion. Fine, people can do that. But presumably it's because it narrows your perspective outside, and you're hanging on to sort of things that are leading you down the wrong path. Like, there's some scientific basis in his mind,
right,
for why a religion is, and that scientific basis, of course, is not a hard science. It is a social science, like almost like sociology in some way. And just occurs to him, maybe from a sociological perspective, that the reason why these bells might sound better to me than something that is completely foreign to me. it could be that there is an objective truth about bells versus Allahu Akbar that's out there. I don't know how we would measure that. Like, there is maybe an objective morality, or like, which is everything he argues against, right, in terms of religion.
But this is already puts him leagues ahead of Sam
but
Harris,
it's just,
who would just be like, that's correct. I stated it. And then I had a thought experiment which confirmed
it's stunning. Like, this is...
It's pure xenophobia. Yeah. You know, like, a lot of times I see, like, women, you know, Muslim women, you know, wearing the head covering. I see them all the time. And it's like, I think about how these new atheists would be like, run up, you know, basically run up to them. What are you wearing that for? Who are you? Take it off. I'm here to save you. I mean, it's just, it's pure hate and xenophobia. They just hate people who are of different cultures, and they think they're primitive because they believe in some kind of spirituality.
And the irony is that I look at that cathedral, and honestly, like, I know my interpretation of a church when I look at it is very different from Richard Dawkins' perspective.
Yeah, it's a place you stay out of because otherwise it burns your skin.
Honestly, like, churches I look at with some measure of, like, foreboding.
As you should. They would never let you inside.
I will tell this old John Benjamin joke. You know what happens when you fart in church? You sit in your own pew. Thank you, folks.
Oh, that's so much better than anything Dawkins had ever done.
Solid joke.
I will tell this new Antifa joke, more like Richard Dawkson, am I right? Get it? Because I just published your address on the internet.
There you go. Well,
oh, God.
All right. Well,
I'll tell you, I don't even listen to those people. That. I mean, I've really done a good job of avoiding all those new atheists anymore because that's just, it's such an old story.
Well, the new atheists, it seems to me, have lost, I think, a little bit of their allure in this era.
No, but now it's the dregs have just gone to this dark web nonsense.
Well, exactly.
I want to say my friend Murtaza Hussein, who writes at Intercept, he tweeted out, he said, "New atheism has dropped any pretense of being about abstract philosophical questions and is full-time focused on the liberal version of white identity politics." That's it.
Yeah, it kind
that's
of puts it. The lie to everything he's done in the past as well.
Yeah,
don't you think?
It's
well, except for all the other Islamic anti-Islamic bigotry he said in the past.
Well, here's what
but before he could cloak it as being I'm against all religion, and he's actually, right. But you know, actually, this church is pretty nice.
I feel like you know, the tip off
definitely better than.
I mean, that's well, they've always said stuff like that, but I think the tip off with Dawkins was this little kid who got the cops called on him for a school project.
Oh, right, yeah.
The main takeaway is that his project was bullshit.
Right.
Like a 13-year-old Muslim kid who said he made a clock and they called him because they said he was like part of ISIS or something and the whole country was mortified. It seemed like for one split second. The big takeaway, this kid's a fucking liar.
This is also how you know that they're charlatans. Like when the new atheist movement, genuine sort of like scholars and intellectuals as they hold themselves up to be, they have moments where their thing is popular and right. They get their moments. And then that passes like every cultural phase does and they recede because that's not, you know, the next thing like platforming people who do race baiting books. But because I am now a free speech advocate,
right. They
don't move on that quickly because they supposedly are scholars and have some adherence to the fact that, like, I've attained this position, this neuroscientific position,
right. Because
of years of study.
Right.
And I am not a dilettante. And so I couldn't possibly move on. Oh, wait, that's where the next thing is going to get me my Patreon hits?
I'm back. Now it is.
And I'm saying this as a professional dilettante.
The next wave of Battle for Ideas, it's absolutely essential to do a bell curve segment. And that has nothing to do with analytics about my audience or
right.
Stephen, you blowing up. Of course not. Just like my trust fund from Golden Girls had nothing to do with my questionable PhD.
Andy.
Yes.
I'm sure you're sold out tonight at the.
Oh, but please. Maybe not. Maybe there's a chance you can squeeze in.
But wait, what's that, Andy? You're going to make available a special for Majority Report listeners?
Yes, for Majority Report.
You're going to release your personal ticket
lock? People can operate a landline. I love you guys so much.
Acme Theater tonight in Minneapolis?
Yeah, two shows tonight, two shows tomorrow. Minneapolis Acme Comedy Company.
There you go.
You got to let us know next time you're in New York. I want to see you do stand-up, Andy. I've never
Hides
seen
out.
You.
Oh, no, there's no question. But it's always Thanksgiving Day is the problem.
Talk about killing the golden goose. All right, Andy.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
this
buddy.
Was great.
Thanks,
love you.
Man.
Bye.
I like the idea of a world where there's like only Chinese places open and Andy doing stand-up. Everything else is shut down.
We meant to do this earlier because, folks, we just got notice from YouTube that was this Wednesday's show, Matt?
Was it yesterday's show?
No, this is a Wednesday show. We had a Gordon, right? Who's it? I'm sorry.
Linda Gordon,
a professor, yes?
NYU.
NYU professor, who has written a scholarly book about the second coming of the Ku Klux Klan. This recounts the change in the Ku Klux Klan from post-Reconstruction, where it was a secretive order, and they had all sorts of hidden rituals, and their hoods, in many respects, were ways to hide their identity.
It was male bonding.
Versus the second wave of the Ku Klux Klan, which was in the early 1920s, late teens, which involved almost 6 million people around the country and was much more open. And it had WKKK, Women's Ku Klux Klan. And
basketball teams.
Baseball teams. I don't know if they had basketball.
Ice cream socials.
They beat the Hebrews 4-0 in a baseball team.
That's depressing.
Baseball game. They were very, very public. And, of course, a fascinating story of our history and how they really fell apart in many respects because this was a business. And there was a lot of corruption, and it sort of dragged them under. But the name of the book was the name of the video that we had for that day, for the live show, was The Ku Klux Klan of the 1920s and the American Political Tradition. We had another video that was specifically the interview entitled Unraveling the Second Coming of the Ku Klux Klan. We received a notice that your video is demonetized. And we requested a manual review, and we got this notice. Hi, Majority Report with Sam Cedar. After manually reviewing two of your videos, now, supposedly, right, they have reviewed these videos and found that the professor from NYU wasn't suitable for all advertisers. As a result, they will run with limited or no ads. Now, here's my response to that. Okay. But I raised this. I mean, it sucks. We're going to lose a little bit of revenue. And I can understand that maybe, like, if I'm selling tissues, even I don't know that this is actually a scholarly professor on there who is talking about history of the United States in a very non-inflammatory way. But, you know, I'm selling Kleenex or I'm selling, koozies or whatever it is I'm selling. And I just don't want people to think Ku Klux Klan, my product.
Well, isn't that the implication of a manual review, though, that like a person actually looks at it and figures out what it is?
Perhaps. But you know what? It's like, fine. Okay. That's how I choose to respond to it.
That's very mature.
However, if I was a little bit less mature, mm-hmm. and my name was, let's say, I don't know, Bill or Dave Rubin, I would send out a bunch of tweets about this. And let's just scroll through some of those, shall we? Here we go. This is Dave Rubin back in May of 2018. And, of course, YouTube demonetized this chat with a libertarian economics professor. One of the reasons I'm proud to partner with Learn Liberty on these videos. Those are the Koch brothers who are sponsoring this. Dave Rubin, April 10th. We need to be careful what we wish for with these tech companies, be it Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Virtually no doubt they shadow ban, downrank, demonetize, and do shady stuff with data. However, the idea that the government can control or fix any of that is crazy. Competition is greater than government. Oh, and here we go. I can see why this would be demonetized. The truth will set you free. This is a video he did with Sowell.
Sowell.
Thomas Sowell.
Yeah. Do we have any more? I mean, because he does this constantly. Oh, here's another one. Our full episode with Thomas Sowell has been demonetized by YouTube. We simply titled it Sowell Full on the back end. Guess that's a scary phrase.
He's suggesting that they demonetized it because Sowell said he was an ex-Marxist.
Now, wait a second.
No,
Hold on for a second.
That at Google.
Now, note on this, not suitable for most advertisers, review requested. He had only 4 views, so it wasn't demonetized. It just said, we need... because. Folks, if it's not posted, it can't be demonetized because it's not eligible for monetization. This is when you upload it. Sometimes they give you a heads up. We got to check into this. They checked into it, and I'm sure this was monetized. Oh, here he is. And, of course, YouTube demonetized this. We already did that one.
But is that so? That was that one too. There, where it hadn't even been posted yet. They had like 2 views.
This one, review requested. Unreal. The live stream celebrating our 600 subscriber milestone on YouTube is being demonetized. What the actual f at this point?
intellectual dark web.
Now, folks. Oh, and then, wait. It didn't end there, did it?
Maybe don't be a soft alt-right gay, man.
Does he then go on TV? He gets on TV, ladies and gentlemen, to talk about how his videos have been demonetized.
No snowflakes around here, folks.
So look, I don't know exactly what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, we got a statement. We got a statement.
Creators are upset.
Well, I think that's right. And we got a statement from YouTube, and it contradicts what you just said. They said over 90% of the videos on the Rubin Report are fully monetized. The remaining 10% are not because they contain discussions of adult topics.
Pause it for 1 second. Now, I'll tell you the way you respond to this. If that's not true, you say, I'm sorry. We have 10,000 videos on our on YouTube, and I happen to know that 9,000 of them are demonetized, and only 1,000 are not. Only 10% are monetized, not the vice versa. That's the way you go respond to this, or you come up with whatever figure it is, and that's why Dave Rubin doesn't do that, because it's what that statement is was true.
Pornography, ISIS, these are topics which many advertisers find objectionable. What's your response?
Okay, I said I don't want to do a David versus Goliath thing here, but I mean, that's just simply right. Not true. I'm telling you right now, as we went to air, I have an iPhone here. It's a very fancy thing. The video that I posted this morning with Phil DeFranco, I can tell you about videos that I did with many people who are mainstream people who appear even on Fox, like Ben Shapiro and Larry Elder, Ayaan Hirsi Ali, right. Who I think is the greatest human rights hero that we have on Earth today.
She is. I
could talk about Bishop Robert Barron from the Archdiocese in L.A., where we talked about religion. People I agree with, people I disagree with. By the way, I don't think I'm necessarily
videos have been demonetized?
This is an across-the-board problem. Yes, absolutely.
The videos
and we
you
have
just
screenshots,
mentioned.
So I don't know. Yeah, and I'm not, BSing you here. I mean, I asked my guy before we started. Can we make it?
There you go. Yeah. He's BSing. Now, I will also say that I think part of the algorithm on some of these, part of the things that, I don't know if they still do it, but they have, I would imagine, they have plenty of data on their users and their viewers. And they probably know, I mean, because they suggest videos to you based upon what videos you look at. They probably know that the vast majority of Dave Rubin viewers just came off of watching, you know, how the white race is better than everybody else. Or, yes, race and IQ or whatever it is.
If I didn't know better, I might think he likes to be demonetized.
Well, it's a big fundraiser. And folks, don't forget, you can become a member of the Majority Report by just going to jointhemajorityreport.com and fight back against this destruction of our free speech about what's going on with the KKK.
Time for us to get some of that sweet Soros money.
And speaking of suppression of free speech, I did a great video about Dave Rubin, which Sam took down to appease Dave Rubin in a craven display of moral cowardice. And you can respond to that.
You called him stupid. You called him stupid.
I did.
And I thought that was impolite. And I wanted Dave Rubin to know.
Because you value Dave Rubin's feelings over a vigorous and open exchange of ideas and facts. When facts don't care about your feelings, as a very smart little bar mitzvah boy so often says. And if you want to join the fight for facts over feelings, go to patreon.com/TMBS. Support the Michael Brooks Show, where Alex Perrine and I had a lot of fun a couple months ago. I was just thinking of the bit we did where we read that libertarian anti-Marx piece. Do you remember?
Yeah, that was really good.
And it was just like, oh, brother, this is the last thing we need.
All right, folks. So,
what?
No, I'm joking. So we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song before we head into the fun half of the program.
did we actually ever put that Rubin video back up again, or is that always down?
I don't know.
Was so funny. Can we? Well, I don't know if we should talk about the back end machinations about that, but that was really funny. No.
And now you guys have something to bond about when he has you on.
Dave Rubin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. They're going to demonetize
Michael
that video.
Michael should not have called you that. Yeah. Absolutely.
Michael's really wrong to call. In the time I got, I had to have a manual review for
no,
this
you
video.
No. You sit with him and be like, I think someone would call you stupid and a moron and uninformed and dumb and craven and potentially even just awful at your job. I just don't
or in the pocket of the Koch brothers. willing to sell out everyone who made it possible for you to get married. Or that you just randomly picked issues up to justify and pretend that you were actually from the left, so you could, like, you know, like single payer or something. Like, wait, I'm sorry, where were we going with this?
Or when you're at the Young Turks, you never expressed any sort of skepticism about their politics, but apparently left because you could get a six-figure salary for doing 30 minutes of work a week. The idea that somebody was saying that is just disgusting. I'm here to debate the issues. You ready to talk about how the post office works, buddy?
Yeah, exactly. So Jimmy Reefer Cake has sent us in a song.
It's called Love Tulsi Madly.
Now,
Jesus Christ.
I think the Madly reminds me of the, I think he's still on his Doors. Yeah, what was the Madly. What was the edict that he was only going to do Doors parodies until what?
Until weed is legal
nationally.
Yes. He didn't specify it first, but I think now he means in America.
Wow, this he's going to run out. Maybe, I don't know. Well, maybe he won't.
Maybe
I
mean, it's global.
The Doors have a tremendous amount of music.
I mean, you can, these songs are so good, you can go around twice.
Exactly, that's true. The Doors.
Wow, really trying to appease. Okay, the so Doors this is
Love Tulsi Madly.
You love Tulsi Madly. You really need her badly. Or don't you love her way? Tell me what you say. Don't you love her platform?
I don't think she thought
she's a living art form. Don't you love her face? Don't you love her cause she's not a corporate whore? She speaks against every regime change war. Don't you love her ways? Tell me what you say. Don't you love her cause she's not a corporate whore? All your love, all your love, all your love with Reefer Madness gone. We sing a happy song of a deep blue dream. Legalize the weed to be on the mark. All right.
You have a mark?
Yeah, don't you love her? Don't you love her, girl? She's not a carpet whore. All right.
I mean, she is like a Hindu far-right nationalist. Takes a lot from defense contractors, but sorry to be
that
petty.
That does not sorry. Rhyme with the song.
It wouldn't. Fair. It doesn't scan.
Word.
What is Perrine's virgin reaction to Jimmy Reefer Cake?
Yeah, you just got entered.
I think I liked it better than an actual Doors song, probably.
That is the correct answer. Tell him what he's won.
Marine wow. on Team Jamie when it comes to the Doors.
There has been every single group from like the new atheist contingent who's watched this show to, you know, people who got all Bernie or Bust dumb. I've had no problem. I said something like, I don't particularly care for the Doors. And the heat I got was just like, you know what? They're great. I am not ever going to comment on it again.
People are canceling.
Dennis Miller's right. There are some things you can't say anymore.
That's yeah, right. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. I discovered the true limit.
Secret executive order from Obama. Folks, again.
Jim Morrison's the only devil that's going to make his way to the promised land.
Join the majoritireport.com. Don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. We're going to head to the fun half. Don't forget also this week on the Michael Brooks show. Was it Matt Taibbi?
Yes, Matt
Taibbi. Oh my God, that seems like it was a year ago. You can sign up on iTunes and on Patreon and on YouTube. And the Antifada this week. You guys.
Yeah, we just dropped a new episode.
Just dropped a new episode. Fresh content, folks. You can find Antifada on iTunes or Patreon.com.
Yeah, if you think me dragging on Jim Morrison is bad, just wait till you see what I say about David Bowie. Oh,
wow. Whoa.
Just kidding. I love him. But I did talk about his Coke spoon that I saw at the exhibit like a lot more than I should have probably.
I literally anticipated like baby boomer like cardiac arrests when I first heard that. I was like, if she's serious, people are going to die. Like David Bowie too?
What that did?
Like from rage. People love David
People not
Bowie.
Like you did.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course say, I liked David
What, that he had a Coke spoon?
No, not the Coke spoon. I took her seriously.
Fuck that guy. Overrated trash.
And this week on the Literary Hangover,
Young Goodman Brown by Nathaniel Hawthorne coming out tomorrow.
There you go, folks. All right. Quick break. 646-257-3920. Won't have a huge fun half, but we will have a fun 15%.
Right.